Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Marco Meglio, editor with Neurology Live. In this episode, we sat down with Dr. John Sims, head of medical development for donanemab at Eli Lilly, to discuss the recent updated dosing label for donanemab, an FDA-approved therapy for early-stage Alzheimer's. Sims, who led the Trailblazer AL6 trial, discussed the new titrated dosing regimen and how it will lower ARIA risk, as well as the positive downstream effects it will have on both the patient and clinician communities. Furthermore, he gave context on the findings from Trailblazer AL6, the trial that tested numerous dosing methods of donanemab that led to the latest updated label. Let's dive in.
Well, let me start with the headlines, I guess. The Trailblazer 6 study was able to demonstrate a new dosing regimen that can reduce ARIA-E. And, we got there before we started the study, before we even had the positive phase 3 study done, knowing full well that ARIA is one of the main risk factors for these new compounds that are targeting amyloid. And that amyloid, we are learning, builds up in the brain, but it also builds up in the blood vessels of patients with Alzheimer's disease. And so the risk factors for this are similar risk factors for those people getting Alzheimer's disease. So APOE genotype, which is a very important risk factor to understand and know, is one also that puts people at risk for Alzheimer's disease and for this ARIA because of the amyloid building up in both places. And so we designed this study to test a couple of regimens to see if we could come up with a enhanced way to improve the safety while not sacrificing kind of the efficacy aspects of the drug. And so that was the original design of the phase 3 trial that we ran.
I mean, awesome little background there heading into the trial. So talk a little bit about what went into the reasons for which dosing method you chose. I know you guys looked at 4, correct me if I'm wrong, different dosing methods in that trial. So talk a little bit about the conversations that were being had and why you chose those regimens themselves.
We had lots of discussions about which ones to kind of pick. It's a very large trial, by the way. So it was 800 people. And so obviously we wanted to keep the standard regimen in there so that we would have something directly to compare to. We even had a debate about whether we should sacrifice that arm for another arm to test, but we thought, you know, you never know for sure, and it's always good to have that arm in there. So we debated about comparing to old data or reference data, but we put that arm in there. So that was a key decision that we came to. And then that left us with 3 other arms to test against that. And so we call one of those modified titration, and I'll come back to that description. We call one kind of a dose skipping arm, and then another one called Cmax arm. And so how did we pick those? So let's start with the modified titration, which was the arm that ultimately won the race in this study. That is simple. We basically just modified the titration that already existed by moving one of the vials that was in the first dosing to the third dose. So that meant that it was kind of 1 vial, 2 vials, 3 vials, and then 4 vials thereafter. And so that was just kind of an improvement in the titration aspect. The dose skipping one, we thought, one of the hypotheses we might test is since we are actively engaging the amyloid that's in the blood vessel, that if we put a pause in there and allow the blood vessel to kind of maybe recover from the amyloid removal, that maybe that timing would allow some recovery and reduce the ARIA. So that's the dose skipping one. So there we kind of gave the initial original dose of 700 milligrams. We skipped the month, and then we caught up at the end. The other one was the Cmax arm, and that one was a hypothesis that was kind of going around at the time that we thought was worthy of the testing. And this is the idea that since these drugs are given through the blood vessel, through the vein, the peak, it rises very fast. And some people thought, well, maybe that fast peak might cause the ARIA. We had some data that was supporting it, but other data was starting to also suggest that, really it's the overall dose that you get might drive this. But we decided it was worth testing. And so in order to test that one, that really required a somewhat of a unique design change for the trial, because that meant we had to give it every 2 weeks in order to test that hypothesis. The goal was to keep it completely blinded And so that meant everyone came in for every 2 weeks. And some people got drugs, some people got saline infusion in order to keep it all blinded, depending on what was going on to those arms. But that was the thought process that went in there. And those were the three arms that really won the day to get into the trial. And as I said, we can come back to talk about the modified titration, but that was ultimately the most successful arm.
I mean, it's awesome that you guys included the original formulation in there and the original dosing schedule in there. I think that was a good add, to say the least, and kind of see the comparisons versus drawing from some previously used data, which obviously things can change a little bit more over time. And rather have more updated data than not, to say the least. So I know we've talked a lot about the actual trial itself, and I know we haven't gone too much into the efficacy and safety data from the trial, but for clinicians who are going to treat patients with Alzheimer's disease, can you talk a little bit about the dosing regimen itself a little bit more in specifics, as well as any considerations or things that they should keep in mind when prescribing this drug to patients and having conversations about this new dosing regimen?
I mentioned already that the main risk factor for RA that we found in trials throughout this class of medications is ApoE genotype. And so that's the key risk. And so one of the things that we also designed into this trial is to make sure that we were stratified equally across all these genotypes, because they each have their own risk. We're talking about being homozygous or having two copies of the APOE4 gene. Those people have the highest risk of RA. Then heterozygous, who have one copy, have the next, and then the non-carriers, anyone with not the APOE4 genotype, have the lower risk. So we spread, made sure that we had those people equally distributed, so you didn't come to a false conclusion by having one arm be enriched for a low risk population. So that part of the design is also part of the discussion that patients should have with their physicians. It is part of the recommendations of the label, and that is that for those patients, it is recommended that they, if they want to really understand their risk for that individual, that they can get what we call genotype, or get their genotype tested to find out whether they have one copy, two copies, or no copies of this APOE4. And that will help facilitate the physician and the patient's conversation about their individual risks and help them balance their own risk benefit for themselves in that discussion, because that is the key risk. There's another risk that we find for donanemab, and that we find that the more pathology you have, the more risk of the ARIA. And so that was another key aspect that we made sure was well balanced and stratified. And that is that we ensured that if you had lots of amyloid, you were well balanced, and if you had low levels of amyloid, you were well balanced. And that we continue to see is an aspect that also plays a role in risk, but it's much less than compared to the genotype that drives most of that risk.
We're going to take a quick break from our conversation with Dr. Sims to keep you up to date on the latest developments in neurology. Welcome to the Neurology News Minute. Here's what you may have missed since our last episode. First, on July 14th, Takeda announced its investigational orexin receptor agonist ovipralextin met its primary and secondary endpoints in the Phase 3 First Light and Radiant Light trials of narcolepsy type 1. Based on these findings, the company plans to submit a new drug application to the FDA for ovipralextin as a potential treatment for narcolepsy type 1. Days later, on July 18th, the FDA formally requested Sarepta Therapeutics to suspend the distribution of Elevidys, its approved gene therapy for Duchenne muscular dystrophy, following a third patient death in recent months. The latest death, which occurred in a Phase 1 trial testing one of the company's investigational gene therapies in LGMD, led to the pause on all the company's clinical trials testing gene therapy products. And finally, on July 23rd, AbbVie announced positive data from its Phase 3 Lunero trial of AD-109, an oral pharmacologic treatment for obstructive sleep apnea. Data showed that AD-109 met its primary endpoint, leading to significant reductions in apnea-hypapnea index relative to placebo over a 26-week treatment period. For more information about these stories, head to neurologylive.com, or you can check out the corresponding link in the show notes. And now, back to our conversation with Dr. Sims.
We've heard a lot about the effects of the genotyping and obviously the genetic impacts and what they can do. We've obviously seen the data, and not even just for donanemab, but a lot of other therapeutics that show that Sometimes it's not the same with this group specifically. So definitely good to call out, to say the least. Dr. Sims, last couple questions for you. Talk a little bit about just some of the downstream effects and some of the implications of this new labeling. What do you think that it can have? What do you think they can do from a system, from a prescribing standpoint? Just talk a little bit about some of the downstream positive effects we hope to see from this new labeling.
So the modified titration was able to reduce the risk in the first 6 months, which is the period of time when most of the ARIA occurs. And so that was a 41% risk reduction in that six-month time period. And that was the primary outcome. We have since now published the 24-week, the 52-week, and just last week, the final data came out, which, again, still reiterates the fact that the modified titration reduces the risk of ARIA. So that most ARIA is asymptomatic, but so a couple of other things that we did test and look at is the severity of ARIA. So we also saw that the severity of ARIA, the distribution was also favored. So if you had ARIA, it was also more likely to be mild ARIA. We didn't have any severe cases in the modified titration. So, and we know that symptoms and serious ARIA are probably the ones that affect patients the most. And so we also showed that only 3% of patients in this trial had any kind of symptoms, and symptoms being most common being headaches, sometimes confusion or dizziness. Those are the most common. So we would anticipate that this will, given the fact that we are able to not only reduce the frequency of ARIA, but perhaps the distribution and severity of ARIA, we certainly hope that downstream from this study, right, that this will also translate into people having less symptoms over time, having less seriousness of ARIA. And I think this will help people and physicians, you know, weigh their own individual risks and benefits make this a choice that they might be able to consider for themselves for treatment. And so ultimately, I think this helps physicians with the discussion. It gives them even more information. It reconfirms many things that we've already found in this class of medications and just adds to that armamentarium of physicians being able to have a conversation for individual patients for their risk benefit. So I think the other thing we certainly hope is that it improves the the conversation so that people are getting diagnosis, because one of the other things that this study didn't directly address, but we have seen in all of our other studies, is that it's important to get the diagnosis early, because that risk seems to be lower and the relative benefits seem to be better for earlier diagnosis. And so that's another aspect I think that's really important, to make sure that we see the ecosystem of the diagnostic systems and that access to physicians for patients who are concerned about their memory to get evaluated for appropriate therapies.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, when the kind of anti-amyloid first started coming about, there was obviously a concern for a lot of people with the side effects of ARIA. So at least to have a different conversation now and to say, hey, there's a few things that we've done, there's a few changes, here's what maybe your perceptions of ARIA have maybe changed a little bit, is definitely very encouraging. And obviously, great that we have published data to back it up as well. I know, you know, sometimes from our side of the things, we see press releases that come with a little bit of data here and there, but to see the actual published data afterwards is very, very reassuring, and obviously provides people with the evidence to say, yes, this medication, this dosing strategy is going to be a lot less risk on you and things of that sorts. Dr. Sims, one last question for you, and I appreciate you taking some time out of your day, give our audience a little bit of insights on this new dosing regimen. I know you talked a lot about the efficacy and safety data from Trailblazer AL6. Was there anything from the study that stood out to you just from a clinical perspective, or anything that shocked you? Just any small other takeaways that you had from the trial?
Well, you know, look, we started the study off with a registration quality study, not knowing what the ultimate outcomes were, hoping that, you know, it would at least shine some light and help us understand ARIA a little better. And so I think probably the one thing that impressed me the most is the impact that we had, perhaps on the highest risk factor. In fact, it wasn't designed to look at the individual genotypes. It wasn't powered to look at those. But when we unblinded and looked at it, the homozygous patient population had some of the most dramatic lowering. And those were the people who are at greatest risk, both from ARIA and from having the disease. And so that part was extremely encouraging. I don't know how reproducible it'll be since we didn't power for it, but it certainly was very supportive of hopefully reducing that risk in those people that have the highest risk. And that is encouraging. And you know, this data also encourages us to continue to improve the therapies, both from an efficacy and safety. And we've been very dedicated to kind of increasing. This is just the first step, right? Where I think we see the future here develop. We're getting more efficacy and more safety for the field. And I'm very encouraged by these results to help drive future innovation.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.